What's up, everybody? It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative. Today we're with Mickey Braun, Mickey and the Motorcars. How you doing, man?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So I guess we'll just start out with what you've been up to. I know the year's kicking off, maybe getting to play some shows or something. Have you been busy with anything?
Yeah, man, I've been real busy. We kind of finish out every year in Boise, Idaho, and do New Year's there. I think it was our close to 20th year doing it there. And then we go from there to Steamboat, Colorado for Music Fest. And that's usually a pretty good barn burner with all of our buddies up there. And we kicked that off and stayed there for 7 days. Did some skiing and a lot of playing music and some late night jams in the hotel rooms. And, you know, eat a little food in between cocktails and things like that. And then after that, I came back home to Boston for a little bit, about a week. And then I flew down to Florida and played Mile Zero Festival down there with another set of all my friends.
Yeah, I know that, and that wrapped up maybe like a week or week and a half ago, and that looked like an absolute blast, man.
Yeah, it's fun down there. This is my I think I've had 7 years down there, or six out of the seven, or seven out of the eight. I can't remember. I know I missed the first one, so can't say that I've been to them all.
Close enough though, man, close enough. Yeah. So I guess I know you guys, just like when I went back and I've been listening to you guys for, you know, a long time now. And also I've been like kind of looking back, and I feel like you guys have always been pretty like, you guys tour a lot. You always have. So I guess as the years go on and you guys keep progressing, well, you get more into your career and everything. Is there like, do you ever find yourself slowing down or any of that? Because, like, just from my standpoint as a music fan, I look at some of these guys who've only been doing it for, like, 2 years. And I'm like, man, that it just sounds not only exhausting but stressful. It sounds – you know what I mean? Yeah. So I guess, like, what do you guys do or you personally do to, like, keep yourself going, I guess, after all this time?
Man, we've been together for fourth year together. So yeah, we've been going at it for a long time, and we started out doing about 230 shows to 250 shows a year, and we did that for probably 10 years, and then it's slowly been getting a little less and a little less as we our crowds are bigger if we don't oversaturate the scene. So we've slowed it down to about 120 to 150 a year now, which is nice. We're all older too. I'm 43 now, and not 19, so the miles on the road aren't quite as easy on the old body anymore. But you know, the things that really kind of keep us going is writing and putting out new records. We're putting out a new one this year in June, and usually we go anywhere between two and 3 years of getting the right material together, and then it takes about a year to a year and a half to really make sure all the right songs are together, and then get in the studio and do the recording, and then you got overdubs, and then you got all the other fun things that come along with that artwork, and finally to get the full package finally done and ready to sell, it takes about a year, year and a half. So that usually gets everybody kind of geared up and excited again, and we start playing the new songs, and that's fun for the crowd, and it's fun for the band, and you know, so after we get this one out, it's back to the old songwriting machine and kind of start over again. And I think that's my number one driving force anyway, as far as not getting bored and not getting lazy.
Yeah, and we'll hit on your new record and everything when we wrap this up for sure. But like with like you said, it's kind of like a routine almost, I guess, like with writing and the community that you guys are usually put into, along with, you know, like Reckless Kelly, of course, and like those guys, like in that Texas music group, which is funny because obviously you're from Idaho.
Yeah.
And I just find it really interesting about, and obviously this was years ago, but the Texas scene, the Red Dirt scene, whichever one, like they it seems like a real community, like it always has been up till today. Mm-hmm. And it's really neat who like all like meshes into it to create like such a unique sound, I guess. Do you like going back to like the early days, I guess, and I don't want to ask you a whole bunch of questions you've had to answer a million times, by the way. So I'm going to try and, you know, keep the old days question short, but is there a certain like reason that you think you guys were like taken in like into that unique scene in Texas from back then, or like was there a reason, or like was it the community, anything like that?
Yeah, it was kind of all of the above, really. We grew up listening, the songs that I grew up listening to and the people I grew up listening to were a lot of kind of underground Texas artists that I mean, a lot of people know about, but you know, your Robert Earl Keynes, Steve Earle, Guy Clark, you know, that's what my dad listened to. And you know, we grew up playing that style. When I started writing, I felt those were my biggest influences. So when I moved to Texas, to Austin, we kind of, Reckless was already down there, and they had their, they were on a booking agency that also signed us on. So they kind of put us with your Bruce Robinsons and your, Cross Canadian Ragweed and Randy Rogers. All those guys were kind of just developing that whole sound, but there was no such thing as Red Dirt. That hadn't even been coined yet. And Texas country hadn't really been coined yet. They were still trying to figure out where to put bands like us, because they didn't have a genre. So they, I mean, people would ask and say, you know, country rock, or hard country, or whatever you wanted to call it. And over the years, I mean, we've been called outlaw country, we've been called red dirt, we've been called Americana, where, you know, pretty much everywhere in between. So the camaraderie with all those bands that were all getting that together at the time without really even knowing it, we just kind of fell into that pocket with everybody else. And we already had our style developed, and it was working. So we stayed with it. And, you know, we talked about going to Nashville, and I went up there and talked to some publishing people for a while with my writing, and I didn't fall into that scene very well, because my style of writing was a little bit more not top 40, and you know, so it wasn't really a good fit for me there. But I did end up falling into writing with a lot of people that it did work out with. Like, I've written with Park McCollum and Randy and Cody, and gotten a lot of cuts on their records that got you know, national, I guess they blew up, they did great. And so that part of it really worked out in the songwriting. But and then just develop friendship over that, and now we just all hang out, and every once in a while we write a song.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. To like, it's such an interesting thing for me, like, because it's, I look back at that time, and it seems like such a cool place to be, as a fan, and also obviously as an artist too. And like, I've talked to guys like Jeff Crosby and Josh Crutchmer, and they just tell me all about how it was back then, and it seemed like a real moment, like a pivotal moment that really created the sound we have today. Even though it might sound different, the seeds of it were from then. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I'm curious, and we'll move on after this, but I'm curious what you might think about, the current sound, I guess. You got, now it's like, just, you can't really put a label on it. You never really could with Texas and Red Dirt and everything. And like, you got guys like Coe Wetzel at the same time, you got guys like Parker McCollum, you know what I mean? It's all different stuff. I'm curious what your thoughts are on like the current state, I guess, of that kind of music, and like, what, I don't know, what you think it might go into next, maybe?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say where it would go. It would be neat to see the genre that it is, the Red Dirt or the Texas country, whatever they want to call it, or, you know, it would be neat to see a little bit more recognition towards that style, because like you say, some of these these younger guys that are kind of only 2, 3, 4 years into it are with TikTok and with all the, you know, podcasts and things that are going on, the they're able to spread the word a lot faster, which is exactly what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great tool to be able to use for all of us. But I think that is a big separation from 20, 25 years ago to
for
now.
Sure.
And I think that's why people are, you know, kind of blowing up so fast. And it's really great for everybody involved, because if you click on them, other things pop up and say, oh, if you like this, then you might like these guys.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I find out about people. And it's amazing how many festivals there are throughout the year all over the country that are focusing on this brand of music. And it's kind of, it's great for us because we can go play some of those festivals. And then, you know, a lot of times we're first, second band on, and a lot of them, depending on what part of the country, we're the headline.
Yeah.
So it really just, it shows the diversity of kind of that it's not exactly how long you've been in the business as opposed to, you know, who's got the hot song right now.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And going off the your point about like how the industry changes, I guess, it is really, I feel like the whole, if you look at the social media TikTok point of view, I've heard many different opinions on that from artists. It seems sure. like I hear the term double-edged sword come up a lot sure. to where, because obviously some people aren't good at social media, some are good at social media, and,
yeah.
and some know how to use it well and some don't. And, mm-hmm. and you could be, you know, as great of a songwriter, great as an artist as, you know, as you can be. But I feel like a lot of it does really sit on the shoulders of social media or TikTok nowadays. So I guess over the years, have you like, because obviously you've been like, you had CDs to now, right? You have streaming yeah. now. It's a lot has changed. And
yeah,
was it hard for you to kind of evolve through that? Was it kind of easy for you? How did you take that on?
Man, basically management. It was our biggest stepping stone, was getting good, you know, getting good management. And, having them kind of help us get through those waters. Cause I mean, at first it was, we just had a notepad on the merch table, and it was an email list, and people would sign up for the email list. And then we started a huge list, and we'd send out emails, you know, once a week when we were going to a certain neck of the woods, everybody would get an e-blast. And,
oh, nice.
You know, it was just before the postcard. But at any rate, you know, that was our first way of advertising that we were getting coming into town. And then obviously, you know, Facebook and all, Instagram and everything else as it took off, and Twitter, and they kind of coached along to get us through those steps. And now it's TikTok and it's everything else. And I'm the first to admit I'm not great at that stuff, you know, like, I wish I was a lot better, and I wish I could do a lot more of that kind of stuff, just because I know it would be more beneficial for the band. But I grew up without power. I grew up without a phone, and yeah, I'm not saying that I can't learn it, but for instance, I just had my wife set this up for me. I was like, oh, I'm used to doing this on a payphone on the side of the road with a truck stop. But it's really cool to see where it is going with all this extra avenues into being able to promote all your things that you're doing throughout the year. And it really, I think, helps out so much with your fan base, because they really do like to know what you're doing off the road and what you're doing on the road. And it's a nice mm-hmm. way to stay in touch with your fans and let them know what's happening.
Yeah. And as an established artist, like it helps, right, to already be like established and have that solid fan base and everything. It kind of sucks sometimes to see like these artists that blow up off like one viral TikTok, one viral song, and then they're kind of, are they like essentially thrown to the wolves? You know what I mean? Like it just seems like kind of daunting. I don't know if you've ever seen that happen or.
Yeah, I'm noticing it more and more. It has happened before too, like just with a good single that's taken off, you know, and or a whole record that's really good that's taken off, and that's usually when Nashville or somebody, LA, whatever, you know, that's usually when the record labels jump in and help out, like, with those bands getting to that next level of going to arenas and stuff. So it's been going on forever. Like, when we were kids, you know, you'd see somebody on CMT and you just immediately, because you were on TV, you were a star.
Yeah.
You know, but sometimes it was the one hit wonder, you know?
Yeah.
And they would blow up for the summer and then, you know,
never hear from
them. Yeah. You look at them now and they're playing it, you know, some little low rent CD bar somewhere. And you're like, oh my God. That
right.
That's the guy that you used to do. You know,
yeah,
that's
that one guy.
Or, you know, yeah, that's that one guy, that one girl with that one song.
Yeah, for sure. But right on, man. Let's talk about songwriting. You seem to pride yourself on your songwriting, and that it's great to see that. Like, I haven't asked this before, and I don't know if this is a stupid question or not, so bear with me. But is there a set difference? You have, like, you know, an artist, right? A performer. And you have the singer songwriter, and I feel like there like a line there between just a singer and a singer songwriter. Obviously, song, like, writing songs, but pretty much like they all write their own songs. Is there like a dividing line to where you would call yourself a singer songwriter rather than just, you know, like an artist or anything like that?
I've kind of like really kind of fell in between. I like to entertain. I do love the live shows and. The writing part, I usually write enough of kind of both, like, to where I write up-tempo songs for live shows, and I still try and keep it to a good storyline or something that people can connect to. And then more of my singer-songwriter stuff is usually the slower, you know, more ballad kind of stuff that really digs a little deeper into, you know, what the lyrics are and really kind of...
Yeah.
Going back with a fine-tooth comb at the end and making sure that everything is not sound too corny or, you know. But I think a large difference in the world of writing for that performer versus the singer-songwriter stuff is singer-songwriter venues are way different. They're usually sit-down, watching, listening rooms, stuff like that, where the performing writing is, you know, get to the chorus, play the chorus more, really get a good hook, you know.
Yeah.
And those are the songs that you kind of usually pitch as your singles. And so you have to always have that in mind, just so you don't fade away. So you can always be putting out tunes that you can be radio friendly with and keep them at you know, within 3.5-4 minutes. So they, you know, the DJs will play them and not go, oh, that's a little too Stairway to Heaven. We need to,
yeah.
We need to either cut it off halfway through or
radio edit.
Or go back to the course, man.
Yeah, it is funny. Like, I've never thought about that. It just seems like such a, like, having to differentiate, like, it seems like, do you have to be in a certain mood? I'm just ignorant to this. So, like, do you have to be in a certain mood to write a radio song versus a more singer songwriting song? Like, I guess that's a pretty, like, open-ended question, but
yeah. I usually write more of my singer songwriter stuff alone.
Okay.
And I write more of my other stuff like that as a co-write. And a lot of times my writing, I get phone calls from other writers because they're working on a project, and
okay,
that is one way to stay relevant as well with everybody, is the co-writing side on other people's records. And it's really kind of fun because then you're seeing where they're going with their record. So they can come to me and say, hey, they have this idea, or they call me and say, hey, I'm looking for a hit, or I'm looking for, I need something a little slower, or, you know, that's going to kind of feel or fall into the rest of the record. And I always enjoy that. But when you go into a co-writing session, I always like to go in with about four, at least three or four good ideas that are already started, either a good solid first couple verses or got a really solid chorus, and then we just have to build off of that and one way or the other.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of the, there's not really a method for me to it. I kind of just bounce around with whoever's throwing darts at me.
Yeah, I find there rarely is, you know, a method. Like, that's a question I'm sure artists get a lot is, oh, what's your songwriting method? And it, like, it's really like, well, I write what I write kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, and like going off that a bit, as I guess, how do you like stay fresh, right? So like how, like writer's block is a thing with anybody who writes stuff. And, I'd imagine like if you run out of experiences or something, like if like a young songwriter versus a songwriter 10 years older than him, they're going to have different experiences. And like, does that have a lot to do with songwriters? Like not just you, but like in general, I feel like, I feel like that's not talked about a lot because it like, it's really cool to watch the growth of an artist. And sometimes it literally is just them growing up and going through different stages of their life. You know what I mean? Is there truth to that?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I've been married, I've been divorced, I've, you know, had years on the road of, you know, good times. We've lost friends over the years. We've had gone through some pretty rough patches. Just as, like you say, getting older, you run into some pretty hard walls, and it's, you know, it's, you write about it eventually. Sometimes it takes a few years to write about it. And sometimes you never even write about it, but, living experiences, I do have a tendency to lean towards the stuff that I actually have lived through or, you know, a close friend that has, or, but I steal ideas out of books. I steal ideas out of movies. I'm always got an eye open for, you know, what's going on. And, to go back to what you were saying with, some of the writing from the younger guys or writing now with younger guys can, it's kind of funny. Cause like you say, like, when I was writing 25 years ago, or when I was first getting started with my, or feeling comfortable with my writing, I listened back to the lyrics and it is mentioning things like, you know, can't wait to call you, or I'm calling you from a payphone booth, or, you know, things like that are so different now because when was the last time you saw a payphone? You know, so people are throwing in things like text messages, or, you know, I got a Twitter from you, or, you know, and that stuff is hard for me to relate to and not feel corny putting it into the song, but it is real life now and it is what it is. So I got to have to kind of put my guard down and go, well, you know, that's actually not cheesy. That's just the way it is, you know, but I feel like it sounds so much cooler when you're talking about drinking whiskey as opposed to
a White Claw.
I was going to say White Claw. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah, no, I like them.
I drink them.
That's funny. I haven't thought of that either. Like I guess like that difference in age or difference in experience. That's hilarious. I never thought about that. I feel like, of course, I was raised on like classic rock, the old stuff. So I always look back at that songwriting and like, I do get what you mean. It's like hearing like, yeah, I sent a text to you the other day. It's like, that doesn't hit as well as I called you on the payphone at the bar or something.
Yeah, nobody else on the other end of the line.
Right.
Yeah.
Mickey, let's talk a bit about what you got coming up. You mentioned a new record, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess what can you tell us about it? What can we expect from it?
Yeah, we recorded it down in Austin, and we did our last one up in Nashville with our buddy Keith Gaddis, and it was fun. It was the first and only record that I didn't use the entire band. I used Gaddis wanted to use his guys. And anyway, so we went and did that one. But this record, we got the band, full band back together, and we recorded it down in Austin at Arlen Studios. which is one of the best, well, it is the best studio in town, if you ask me, and most people that record in Austin. But there's so many great studios in Austin, but that one's definitely our favorite. And we brought our old buddy Dave Abeda, who used to play guitar at Reckless Kelly. He produced Careless and Naive with my brother Cody. So we'd already worked with him a bunch, and so we called him up and asked if he wanted to do another one. He said, yeah, absolutely. So we did that at in Austin, and my brother Gary's been writing a lot lately, and well, I keep saying that, but it's been about 10 years now. He's been writing a lot more, so we've been putting a lot more of his tunes out on our records, and that's been really nice for me for the studio and for live shows. I'm only singing about three quarters of the songs now as the lead singer, so it gives me it's kind of fun to stand back and watch somebody else take the wheel and,
yeah,
and just play rhythm guitar and harmony.
Right on. So yeah, and I just wanted to, you said that when you recorded without the group, I'm curious because I know a lot of bands, or not bands, but more artists, like especially nowadays in country music, like they have like the studio guys, right?
Yeah.
So was that kind of weird to, I'd imagine it'd be like a weird kind of transition right there.
It's it was very different from what we'd done for mm-hmm. sure, just because of, you know, in the past we usually worked the songs up and almost had them where we wanted them going in the studio just because the band had been already playing them. So this other way of doing it was we just had the bare bones, didn't have intros, outros, solos, we didn't have anything worked up. So I just would go in and sit down in the morning with the studio guys, and I'd just sit there in the room and play through the song one time, and they'd take notes on it, and then we'd go in and play through it like two times and then hit red, and we'd go for it and usually get it in two or three takes and move on. And it was a lot of fun working a record that way, just because it kind of developed its own sound in the studio.
Mm.
And you weren't already, you know, kind of stuck on something in your mind as to where it was going to go.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of our other stuff might have taken different routes if we had done it that way. So we kind of combined both of those theories together for this new record coming out. We didn't overplay them. We didn't play them live. We didn't really do anything until we went into the studio, and I sent around acoustic versions of me singing them to all the band guys, so they were familiar with the chord changes and all that. But nobody really, we kind of told everybody, don't work up a bunch of parts. Be familiar enough to where you can come in, or if you think it's something that's really cool that you want to do, look, we'll hear it, but don't get your feelers hurt when we say nope. That's not what we're looking for.
Right.
So it was a lot of fun working with Dave, and he's got a great ear, and he had a really good idea of where he wanted the song to go as well. And him and I and Gary would sit down and just kind of hash through song by song and figure out what tones we wanted and what, you know, guitars we wanted played on it, and keys or C3 or piano or just every little step of the way. It was a lot of fun getting through the songs and being able to keep them fresh and at the same time get to use my guys. So
yeah,
and that made them happier too. They were all pretty cheesed at me. I told them they weren't going to Nashville with me for 2 months.
Yeah, I'd imagine, but it's good you got it worked out now, man, and I'm excited for it. Do you have like a date or a specific time of year we could be looking for this, or
mid-June?
Okay.
The actual date itself flips around. I think it's like the 19th or 20th is what we're shooting for, and I think we're putting out our first single next week. So
we'll probably
have at least one, maybe two singles before the record actually drops.
Awesome.
I guess that's what the kids are doing these days. So.
Dropping records and singing.
Yeah.
But that's great, man. Looking forward to it. I guess before we head out here, thanks again, by the way, for hopping on. This was great talking to you. But what are your, since it's, I could still ask this question because it's only February, but what are, do you have any certain goals or anything this year specifically you're looking forward to for you guys or want to accomplish, anything like that?
Yeah, we've been a little light on the East Coast in the last couple of years just because it's been, it's long. It's so hard after you've been around for so many years to go touch everybody, you know, wants to see it, which is a great problem to have. But the hard problem is with, you know, prices of just being on the road with seven people and everybody's getting paid every night, no matter what. So it just, it makes touring a little bit harder in certain areas. So that's kind of a big goal this year is to focus on making sure that we're spread out enough where we're touching at least close enough to where everyone can make a, some people might have to make a 7-hour drive to come see us. But, you know, I've drove all night to see people before. So hopefully we'll have the same effect and, you know, try and cover all the bases. That's kind of my main goal this year and hopefully get some good traction with the new record and just try and stay moving forward and climbing the hill and not, going backwards and falling down it.
Absolutely, man. That's awesome. And also, you're going on a little acoustic tour, aren't you? With Jeff, right? Yeah. That'll be fun. Yeah. So, I guess real quick, how did you guys, get in touch? Like, back then, like, how'd you guys get in contact?
Idaho is, that's the deal there. But, my dad was in charge of hiring our festival that we do up there, the Braun Brothers Reunion. Mm-hmm. And, he hired Jeff to come up and play that. And that was the first time I met him, I believe. But we had done quite a few shows where he'd opened up for us. And then we booked a tour going through, the first time I actually hung out with Jeff was in LA. We played the Troubadour and he just came out to the show and we were opening up for Reckless on that run. So after our show was done, I only had to get up and sing a couple of tunes at the end of their set. So him and I were just shooting the breeze and drinking and realized that we had a lot more in common than we thought. So anyway, so let's try and figure out a tour. So we did. We figured out a 2-week tour. And they went out with us, opening up, and we went all over the place and just had a blast. And we started writing songs together and just a real natural, easy songwriting fit. And he kind of just fell into place with me and my brothers. We all write together now a lot. He's probably our number one guy that we all kind of send a tune to that's leaning that way. And we're stuck. Like, I'll call Crosby.
Yeah.
We started doing little acoustic runs about three or four years ago, but real small ones. This is the first one that we're going out that's longer than 10 days, kind of the whole, throughout the whole month. But the majority is the second half, going to the East Coast, doing all that. And the first part, next week, we're doing three shows around Reno, Nevada. And that'll be fun. One of them's kind of private, and then the other two are open to the public. But him and I have a pretty good time on stage because we've toured a lot together, and then we hang out a lot together at home. He's actually always crashing over at the house. We get over there and start writing. And I'm like, stay here. We'll see if we can get that last verse in the morning or whatever.
Right.
That's
on.
Nice way of saying we're too fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a good guy. I had him on here a while back. He's funny as shit too.
Yeah. He's great. Yeah. He really is. We have a good time.
Yep.
Yucking her up.
Yep. So, Mickey, thanks a lot, man. This is great. And, people find you guys, Mickey and the Motor Cars on socials and your website and everything, right?
Yeah. Just type it in. No E and Mickey. But these things still popped up.
Awesome. But anyway, thanks everyone for listening. Mickey Braun, thanks for hopping on. This is great. Everyone, make sure to check him out. Look for that record coming up this year. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
My boots look good on your bed. And I- And I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight? Try to make a